This is Stateside. I'm Lester Graham, and we're out of the studio and visiting the home of Joe and Shelley Trumpy near Grass Lake in Jackson County.
So, you want to look outside first, inside
sure,
first?
Sure, outside's great.
Okay. This is kind of our outdoor rabbit grazing area in the summer.
It's always fun to see these free-range animals, but this farm's centerpiece is a straw bale constructed house. So Joe, tell me, what does that mean?
It means that the building is actually constructed out of bales of straw. So it's all natural materials, and I'd say close to 90% of all of our building materials for the home came within 10 miles of where we are right here.
Now, of course, there's a structure, beam and post structure underneath it, but you also had a hand in getting that wood as well.
Correct. Yeah, when we were planning, it was at a time when the emerald ash borer had just started to spread across the state, and Jackson County, just like Washtenaw County and Wayne County, were all under quarantine. So I struck a deal, met with the city forester at the city of Jackson, and was able to salvage a lot of ash trees out of the city of Jackson, which is just 10 miles from here.
And then you milled it right here on the property. I want to ask you, because people hear straw bale house and they'll either think, oh gosh, Northern California hippies or something like this, but this construction goes back a long way.
Sure, it goes back to the very invention of the baling machine. So you see some of the first, actually they were hay buildings in Nebraska. Once, you know, places that didn't have a lot of building materials that were building sod homes, once they had these big, nice brick-shaped blocks of hay or straw, they were able to innovate and figure out a way to build homes out of them.
And I should tell you that it's covered with an adobe, and you made the adobe right here as well.
Correct. So the adobe is a mix of sand, straw, and clay. So it's made out of the soil that's right out of here from the property.
Now, how long have you lived in the house? When did you finish it?
We got our occupancy permit in 2009.
How's it holding up? How do you, you know, how comfortable is it? What's it like to live here?
Yeah, it's doing great. You know, we intentionally built the house to be just a little bit under the American average in terms of square footage. It's about 2,200 square feet. It's really easy to keep cool in the summertime. And in the wintertime, you know, we burn wood, so it's as warm as much wood as we want to burn. But it's been performing very efficiently and very comfortably.
Now, you're off the grid.
Correct.
You also raise a lot of your own food. Mm-hmm. You have a lot of heritage breed animals here, livestock here. Mm-hmm. What's the goal here for you and your family?
We started farming really focused on the livestock and a small garden. And over the years, it's really grown into a goal of growing at least half of our own food. And certainly we've exceeded that goal. My wife keeps a huge gardener. Actually, the whole family works in the garden, but Shelley cans anywhere between 500 and 700 jars of food, plus a lot in the freezer. We've not purchased meat or eggs in well over 20 years. So we've got a good-sized flock of Jacob sheep, around 50 sheep. We keep around a half a dozen Highland cattle, miscellaneous goats, turkeys, rabbits, chickens, ducks.
Now, you've got a job. She's got a job. She's a school teacher. You're a professor, an associate professor at the University of Michigan. Mm-hmm. This all sounds like a lot of hard work. What kind of lifestyle do you have here? What do you do on a typical day?
Well, we do what we love. So being able to spend our time working around and working on the projects is what we enjoy most about the farm. So, you know, people look at us and think, boy, it's so much work. And, you know, it's all in what you spend your time on and what you prioritize. So we didn't start this big. You know, when we first started, it was a small little farm, 3 acres, just a few tomato plants, a couple of sheep. And over the years, we've kind of learned what our capacity is and how much we can handle. And, you know, we're pretty much kind of peaked at this point with the number of sheep and animals and the size of the garden.
It sounds like, though, I think for some people, either idyllic or an incredible amount of sacrifice.
We try to show that there's not significant sacrifice. I mean, I think it's all in how you choose and prioritize. And it's really not about the sacrifice. It's about paying attention. So living off the grid, for example, if you read about living off the grid in this part of the country, all the books say, oh, it's a bad idea. It's impossible. It's really difficult. But with careful design and really being very careful and paying attention to your daily use and what your priorities are, it's not been as difficult as you would think. You know, the sacrifices that we take on during the winter months when our power is at its limited point because of the short days and limited sun, you know, we might have to postpone our laundry for a week until we have a sunny day, or I don't work in my workshop as much, or we don't use the microwave during the winter.
So I think a lot of people like the idea of living off the grid. It sounds kind of independent. What's the reality that people should consider before they even get to that point?
Simply starting to pay attention to your electric bill. How many kilowatt hours are you using every month? What's most of that energy going to? Can you start to set a goal to drop that by 10, 20, 30%? And once you start to pare that back, you can start to think about, well, what would happen if I put up 2 solar panels or 3 solar panels and start to expand your input of green energy?
I think for a lot of people, they don't realize the first step in a lot of this is making sure your house is well insulated. And with a straw bale construction home like you've got, that was built into it.
Correct. Yeah, certainly the energy efficiency of the home in terms of heating were at least 2, maybe 3 times more efficient than a conventional home.
And you do have a fairly small solar array.
Correct. Yeah, it's a 4-kilowatt array. It's a tracking array. And we've got 60 golf cart batteries that we store power, which gives us, we can go about 4 days without sun in what's stored in those batteries.
So what was it that drew you and Shelley to this lifestyle? What was it in your background or in your education or in your belief in life that you said, hey, we're going to do this, have a lifestyle that's less burdensome to the earth?
Yeah, I'd say it, for both of us, it really started with the animals. We both loved animals. We actually met studying abroad in Scotland and fell in love with each other and the Highland cattle and the sheep that we saw. And once we started to make plans to get married, we also started to make plans about having a farm and our own sheep and cows. And once we got comfortable with keeping those animals around and understanding the wool and eventually the meat, it started to open up a lot of questions for us and look at and investigate industrialized meat, for example. And once we understood what conventional meat looks like, it put us on even a more direct path for really wanting to be sustainable and growing healthy, happy animals that we could consume ethically and feel good about.
So are you guys doing this for you, or are you doing this as an example to others, as a statement?
Both. We do it for us because we really want to eat well and treat our animals well and have good food. We enjoy the relationship with the land and the animals and the food, certainly. But we also want to be able to demonstrate to other folks that there's ways to get by burning a lot less fossil fuel, being closer to your food and the food systems that we live close to. So it certainly is about an example as well.
I want to get back to the house a little bit. I have these ideas of, wow, when it rains, does it smell like musty straw? Mm-hmm. Is there a problem in this climate with keeping this adobe on because, you know, it's not Arizona?
Right. Yeah, no, there's no odor at all. The walls stay very dry, and part of that is the design that I've built. We have a 3-foot stem wall all the way around the whole building.
What's that?
It's a stone wall that has elevated the bales off of the ground to protect them from any rain or snow that drifts up against the house. And it's also set up passive solar, so we've got most of our big windows facing the south. So the house acts like a greenhouse in the wintertime, and we can actually see the house temperature rise 5, 6, 7 degrees by itself without even burning any wood during those days. So the sun also helps us dry out any moisture in the clay plaster on those sides of the house. On the north side, we've got big overhangs, like we're sitting here in our summer kitchen, which has a huge overhang that protects our walls completely, and they never get wet at all.
What would be different from living in this house than, say, living in mine, which is, you know, a 1964 ranch?
Realistically, nothing. There's not any sort of different maintenance that you have to do to the house. We don't have to paint our walls. The adobe has a natural pigment in it, so we just monitor it to make sure that any of it hasn't washed off. And if it ever did, we'd have to reapply it. But otherwise, it's not maintained any differently than a conventional home.
Now, you talk about burning wood. Tell me about your heating system.
We have a wood-burning cook stove in the home that we use to cook with, and it also provides heat. The main heat source comes from what's called a wood gasifying boiler. Ours is made in Austria. Actually, it's a very, very efficient boiler. It actually gasifies the wood and burns that gas, that wood gas, and we use that to heat our water. So it does our domestic hot water for our showers and washing, and it also does, we have radiant floor heat through the home.
I see you've got a garden in the back, you've got an herb garden in the front. These are sizable. Everywhere I look around here, I think, oh gosh, he's got to chop wood, he's got all this gardening to do. And again, this looks like a lot of work to me, other than being obviously fit, because you never get a moment of rest. What is it like to keep doing that and making sure that, you know, you have food for the winter and heat and so forth?
Well, we certainly rest. We take vacation. We have a television. We'll watch it on occasion. Not often, but we do. No cable, no satellite. So, yeah, we certainly stay busy. But again, it's kind of part of routines, you know? It's like getting up and making your morning cup of coffee. You know, we'll make our morning cup of coffee, sit out here and get excited about going to weed in the garden or harvest. Or, you know, it's not like you can 600 jars of food in a day. It's part of a routine. So, you know, yesterday, Shelly picked some beans in the morning. My sister was over. We had breakfast with her. We went to a movie with the kids. She put a batch of food in when we got home, processed it. And it's just part of kind of the routine.
Now, you've been recognized recently in a magazine. Tell me about that.
Mother Earth News magazine honored us as naming us Homesteaders of the Year.
And what does that mean?
Each year they name four different families, four different farms, as kind of living the ideal that Mother Earth teaches people about, and they've done that since the early 70s, about living independent, self-sufficient lifestyles.
Quite an honor. And you've got, of course, the cover story as well.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, we're really excited. What an honor. We've read Mother Earth for years and years, and we've learned a lot about, neither of us grew up on farms, so reading Mother Earth was part of our education.
You've got kids. What do they think about living here?
They are both middle school. Well, actually, our oldest is going into high school next year. You know, they're normal kids. They love sports. They see the farm as pretty normal at this point. You know, they're not 4-H kids. We couldn't get them. We tried to get them interested in showing the animals, but they enjoy the animals. They do their animal chores. But for the most part, you know, they like their sports. They do their chores. They like school. Normal kids.
Is a different kind of lifestyle. I don't think everybody in a middle school would understand quite what you're doing here. And I'm wondering how they interact with their friends and that you're pursuing a different kind of lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it isn't so noticeable. It's not like they're wearing, you know, different kinds of clothes to school. So a lot of it is, you know, patterns of behavior. So when they go over and spend the night at a friend's house, you know, one of the things that might come up when they come back is like, oh my gosh, you should have seen they left every light on in the house, you know, overnight. Unbelievable. And, you know, we're certainly conditioned that during the wintertime, you leave a room, you turn off the lights because we've got to save our power. So certainly those patterns show up. And when they have friends out, they do show a lot of pride in the house because their friends see it's an unusual, unique home. And they've got special things in their bedroom that they help design, like there's a loft. And they take good pride in showing their friends all the animals, and their friends think it's a cool place. So,
after living here for a while, is there anything you wish you would have done differently?
It's a common question, and, you know, The immediate answer is no. You know, our brains don't exactly work that way. Our brains are really set up about problem solving. And so the design of the farm was very much about how do we make all this work as efficient as we possibly could. So it's kind of this always evolving thing. It's not done. You know, people ask, hey, is your house done? Is the farm done? And you know, farmers know the farm is never done. There's always something to do, which is one of the things we love about it, is that there's always this kind of iteration of looking what we did this year, thinking about it, what we can do better next year. It's a lot like teaching, even, of, you know, how do we improve? How do we move forward and advance the cause in a better way next year?
That's Joe Trumpy, and he and his wife and their family were recognized as one of four families that were Homesteaders of the Year in the U.S.